Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
And I'm Lori Collar, and I am from TLC as well.
Hello, I'm Tara Sheffield from Slide Rabbit, and I'm based out of Chicago.
Hi, I'm Richard from Bright Carbon. I'm in Boston, but we're spread out all over with just a few people on the East Coast and most of our team across the pond in the UK. They will be brought up during today's session, I'm sure.
All right, today we're talking about the Presentation Guild's professional presentation certifications from the designer or the test taker perspective. And it's going to be really great because there is a lot to talk about. The Presentation Guild, well, they're getting set to go live with an industry first, professional certifications for presentation designers. This is a big move and, well, something that I personally think that we've been missing in our industry as we continue to solidify and become more and more, well, professional. What I'm viewing this is it's a way to make those that are not familiar with presentation design know if someone has the skills to kind of make things go in the presentation design world. We have the inside scoop. I mean, we really do. Just a few weeks ago, this group was each invited to be a part of a beta test group to go through the specialist level certification. We're a bit limited in some of our conversations as we cannot talk about the actual questions and it's, you know, kind of an NDA type of environment, but we have plenty to talk about and we're going to share our experience, provide some test taking insights and some test taking tips. Okay, before we jump into talking about the certification test, and spoiler alert, I checked, we all passed. We each successfully earned the Certified Presentation Specialist credential for PowerPoint Professions Proficiency. Yeah, it'd be better if I could actually pronounce it. But we received a great title. We are actually credentialed professionals all about presentation. So everyone, before we kind of jump into that whole big titling, expand on the opening and tell us a little bit about who you are, something about you. And you got to give us at least one trivia fact about you and your life. Who's up?
I'll go first. So I'm Lori. I work with Troy at TLC Creative, where I'm sure most of you know we share ownership, management, and creative duties. I love what I do, which is being a graphic designer. And I absolutely love designing presentations. As you probably know, we keep busy with presentation work, both in the office and on the road. I love being on site with clients and working one-on-one with them in crafting, rehearsing, running their presentations. While we're now empty nesters, when traveling, this is my trivia fact, when traveling, I do miss our dog Scout terribly, which leads me to perfectly promote a shameless self-promotion trivia fact. Our dog Scout, she has her own Instagram. Yep. Everyone in the family got tired of me texting photos and videos of her, so I found a more appropriate outlet. So if you're interested, search for Scout Collar and you'll find a cute Aussie Lab dog full of personality. Totally not related to presentations, but there's my trivia fact. Tara, how about you?
Yeah, I'm Tara Sheffield. I'm one of our two art directors here at Slide Rabbit. I specialize in finding creative and clear visual approaches to complex ideas, as well as expressing branding in a presentation outlet. I've been with Slide Rabbit since its inception in 2012. I guess a little bit more info and a trivia fact about me would be, I mentioned I'm based out of Chicago, but I'm actually getting ready to move my family to Seattle next month.
Well, speaking of time zones and multiple time zones, Richard, tell us about you.
Yeah, so I've already introduced myself, haven't I? So I work with Bright Carbon, and I'm unlike most other folks that will probably listen to this. I don't actually do the graphic design myself, so I work with some great people to do it. But my role is more about the storytelling and the visualization, and I desperately try to learn about some of the graphic designs we go along. But I also love playing with PowerPoint. I really like to push it, see what we can do. And every year, as a lot of you guys do, Troy and Laura, you certainly do, we create PowerPoint Christmas cards, as you know, you like to do. And I tried to push myself to see what I could do and create as many animations on a single slide as I could. I ended up with 1,006 animations on a single slide, and it works really very nicely. Of course, the following year, I was then challenged, well, can you do 2,000? So I broke it even more and did 3,126 animations on a single slide. I don't recommend it, but it was quite good fun at the time.
And PowerPoint, I can't imagine your animation pain. I need.
Well, you can go to the Bright Carbon website and you can download it if you want to. You can play around with all of them. But
no, I've actually seen the Christmas cards, but I'm going to go download it just to see the animation pain, because I strongly advise against that. And I'm the guy that does that many animations. Well, evolution has changed. I used to. Okay, yeah. So I'll wrap up this little segment so we can get into our conversation with my trivia, and that is. Before presentations, I was the founding partner in one of the largest indoor rock climbing gyms in the world. So it was another life, and it was lots of fun. And what's even more trivia based is our daughter Kaylee is based, she's in the Navy, based in San Diego, and she frequents the gym that's still up and running that you know I helped build and this and that. So little trivia facts there, but now let's move into the world of presentation.
Troy, what was your journey to go from a rock climbing gym to one day you're going to have to share that.
I married a designer who changed my life.
Love it.
Can we put that on the recording, please?
Okay, I want to start things with talking a bit about credentials kind of in general, not necessarily the presentation ones. The presentation, the professional presentation certification, it's a big, ambitious undertaking. I mean, I acknowledge that. This is a big deal. And there are not really a lot of certification programs in the whole design industry. When we are interviewing for design positions here at TLC Creative, you know, I look at school degrees, which can provide some information, kind of the same as credential. You know, in other words, you've proven you know what you're doing to some degree in the field that we're interested in, but I haven't really looked specifically at credentials. So I'm not really sure how this is going to affect my mindset. I'm thinking about it right now. But in general, here's my question. I'll get to it. Do you personally have any credentials, college degree or other credentials that you can share with us? Just so we can kind of set the field on our thoughts on credentials.
I'll start at the bottom and say I have nothing design related. But then, as I mentioned, I wouldn't consider myself a designer. I work with a lot of great designers, and a chunk of that is rubbed off. So I can maybe talk about it reasonably well and make some useful objective comments and things. But I'd have to heavily draw on inspiration from others to create anything myself.
Fair enough. Lori, do you have specific credentials, degrees, or anything?
No specific credentials. I do have a college degree in graphic design, specifically with an emphasis in applied art and design, kind of vague, from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo here in California. I mean, it's not a degree or a credential, but I do try and attend, you know, some sort of educational something when possible, you know, the Adobe training sessions, design conferences, but that's about it.
Yeah, that would fall under the continuing education, which I think is another valuable thing, maybe a great conversation. Remind me of that to put that down for a conversation for future. Tara, any credentials, degrees, or anything you would consider industry specific to, like your scuba credential doesn't count, but your anything industry specific?
Yeah, definitely. You would say. I have a bachelor's of fine arts in digital art, and I'm now a certified presentation specialist, and that's it.
Oh shoot! I could have said that.
Yeah,
honestly, it's cool. You know that.
Bring it. I was so waiting for everybody to chime in for it because I forgot to say that one right up front. So I'll go with I actually am more in the boat with Richard. I do not have a degree in design. I have several degrees, just none of them were actually in my field of career now, and I don't really have any credentials that apply to the design industry. And as I was thinking through, I was like, okay, there's some Adobe ones, you know, there's just not really allowed out there. So this is truly an industry first in my mind. But because each of us is responsible for hiring in some capacity, here's the question: is a presentation credential a good thing? Maybe I should say, is it a good thing for us? Is it a good thing for big corporations? Is it a good thing for hiring managers? How do you think this credential is going to play out in the long run over the next few years and extending forward?
So I think it's fascinating that actually very few of us have, like, well, you and I, Troy, don't have any formal things at all. And Tari, you've kind of got the degree. What we do at Bright Carbon is typically look for that kind of graphic design type degree and build it up. I think it will be really interesting to see a formal credential in a way that, as you say, you can get for Adobe and stuff. But I see the value of this more being not so much in a design specialist studio, perhaps, where you've got the ability to teach people about presentations and you're looking more for that kind of design kind of flair, which is much more difficult. But maybe to be able to separate you out in a larger corporate environment, I'd see that as being really valuable, because there people are creating presentations all the time. And it's so hard to be able to demonstrate to people, you know, on a CV, for example, how you can develop presentations, what you've been able to do, especially as we've just established, actually, a lot of people don't have design backgrounds related to this. So you wouldn't automatically assume that you can be brilliant at presentations without that kind of credential. I think it'd be really valuable.
I agree. I think it's certainly, it can't hurt. You know, when we look to hire, of course, we look for the college degree. We look at the portfolio. We ask questions, trying to ascertain, you know, not only do you know how to use the programs well, but you know, do you have a sense of design? Are you owning, like, how did you design that thing in the portfolio? Did you do that or was that a class project? But if they have a presentation certification, I just think that's another step to help us understand that, okay, this person at least has some good, solid experience. I know when Troy and I are hiring, we don't even look for PowerPoint work, because we're like, if you say you're a PowerPoint person, yeah, you're not, because you don't use it like we do, guaranteed. We're going to have to teach you everything from the ground up. But if you have a PowerPoint certification, that's a whole new ballgame in my mind.
Yeah, I agree as well. I do think it's a good thing. Training designers to use PowerPoint to the level we do can be very time consuming. So hiring someone who has the design qualifications and the certification would be great. For example, if we're hiring a designer during a busy month and didn't have time to train them in PowerPoint, it would be helpful because we would already know what level they were at and they could just hop right in.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I got to actually backtrack, because I just thought this through in my head here, which is not always a linear path. I have a Microsoft MVP for PowerPoint award. I'm going to count that as a credential. Microsoft has recognized me. It's not it is an earned thing. It's a recognized thing. But I do have something to talk about, and I've held it now since 2004, and I just got annually awarded this past month. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Congratulations.
I actually can't think of anything specific to the design industry, so I'm going to do that. Now, is this credential going to move forward? As Lori said, we actually, years ago, used to put out, we're looking for a presentation, you know, designers, this and that. We don't even list PowerPoint in our job listings anymore. We're looking for a designer that we can, that is a good designer that is trainable, that's willing to learn and work in other, you know, other vehicles and other design areas. Because, you know, how do you ask for a designer that, hey, we need to design graphics that are going to be 184 feet wide by 18 feet high, and they need to be kind of motion graphics, but kind of the same idea as print design many times. It just doesn't work. So, but what I am saying about the credentials, here's my thoughts on this. I think it's going to definitely benefit the corporate world. Richard, I think you're straight on there. The hiring managers, it gives them something to benchmark everybody by. So that's probably where it's going to apply the most. I'll say if or when we get someone actually sending us a resume and it lists a presentation certification credential, I would elevate that candidate probably above the majority, but not for the reason of thinking they are a good PowerPoint designer. I know that they now at least know how to function in the program, and that's going to cut our training time. but it's still going to boil down to, can they design and do they have a good eye for things? And the conversation really isn't going to change there, but it is going to tell us more about their, well, you know what the other thing it'll do? It'll tell us that somebody that's taken the presentation certification, they're kind of entrenched in the presentation world. They know what the Presentation Guild is. They're probably a member, which is awesome because we can search the directory and see if they're a member of the Presentation Guild. And if they are, they're kind of aware of a lot more in presentation than the majority of people. So, okay, so I'm actually recanting and saying, yes, this is more valuable than I was originally thinking, but I still think it's going to be better for the corporate world. Okay, before we kind of jump into some of our test-taking experiences, I want to frame this up kind of carefully. The Presentation Guild certification team, they asked for some beta testers to confirm the process. I mean, everything from the admin to the website to the actual test-taking system to the actual test questions and whatnot. I think it shows they're an organization serious about getting things done professionally and getting things done right. I also think it's safe to say that our collective experience, as you'll hear through this conversation, we were the beta testers and it was a program in beta. There's a lot of under the hood things happening between now and its release to kind of refine and fine tune. Anybody can stop and correct me if you had a different experience. But I think it's, let's just say we had a more challenging experience than everyone else listening will experience when they get to the official launch date. Am I in alignment here? Anything we should talk about more?
Well, the launch date's October 1st, just so you know. It's official now, so if that's helpful, everyone can start training or getting their certification starting October 1st. I think everyone would agree the purpose of beta testing is to work out the kinks of the system, and we all found a few. And that I realized quickly that when I was preparing for just taking the practice test, that there were some areas of the presentation design world that I just don't play in. And I'm like, uh-oh, I know nothing about, you know, this or that. So I'm not saying that I thought I knew it all, but I did realize that I actually needed to study and review a few areas that fell in unfamiliar territory for me.
I found exactly the same, Laurie. I think it covers all PowerPoint functionality and all the different facets of creating a presentation. And some of it you may never come across. You know, you can spend years and years doing this and still never do it. I learned something during the test. I have never before seen the table controls on the top left-hand corner of PowerPoint. And so you can add in, you know, first row and last row and summary and footer and all that kind of stuff. I've never seen them before. But there was a question about it. And I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the standards. But that was interesting to me that it can push you. Because I just never use tables, and that was fascinating. And so I think other people will experience that as well. You can do a lot of work in presentations, and there will be bits in this that you don't know. But the fact that it is open book, I think, is going to really help, because as long as you are, you know, familiar enough and you're expert enough in presentations and PowerPoint, then you'll really be fine. It won't take you long to be able to find it, but that was interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I learned a lot about accessibility and a lot of different things that I hadn't found before and, or just hadn't used in a while. There's definitely going to be areas that you need to brush up on it. It'll just be different for everyone. And yeah, this is definitely a test that focuses on PowerPoint proficiency. And even though presentation design does involve a lot more creative aspects than covered on the test, this is a nice benchmark to know designers have the technical skills to build the presentations correctly.
I completely agree. I was definitely online during the testing time. It is open book. That is not cheating. There was a number of things, like there was a number of ADA, disability, accessibility questions, things like that, that I just wasn't familiar with enough to actually answer the questions. But maybe another thing to say is the test does prove that somebody can be, they have resources. They're just not able to say, I don't know. You have to go find the answers. And maybe that's a good thing when I'm thinking through if somebody says they've gotten the certification.
But I think the point was, you know, you'll never be able to know 100% of it for this kind of test. But what you do have is the experience and the knowledge to have heard of it, perhaps. So you need to just check on the details. So, I mean, you've got a time limit. It's 3.5 hours. And you're not going to be able to rock up having never used PowerPoint before and be able to pass it. I mean, far from it. True. But if you're there, you think, right, hang on, I know something about that. I need to go and research that bit. And it only takes a couple of minutes. You know, we're not talking about a thing that's in depth for each of the questions, but there will be a couple of questions, I'm sure, where you're going to find that, where you aren't just going to be able to immediately give the answer. And I think just that ability to find things, that ability to do stuff is quite a valuable thing to test as well.
So yeah, it might be a couple or a couple dozen questions you have to research.
Yeah.
going on the experience thing, I personally feel the questions were not designed to trick us, but I did find many of them very tricky. In other words, you really had to kind of think it through and decide if, as example, asking which feature of PowerPoint are options. And one of them sounds reasonable. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, that could be it. But it's not until you look into the UI and see that that's actually not the name of an actual feature in PowerPoint. So, what did you guys think about it being, again, I don't think the questions are designed to trick you like a bad high school teacher would do. But I did find many of them tricky where I had to really think it through and go, is this correct or not correct?
I think that plays to what you were saying earlier that, you need to be familiar with PowerPoint. You need to be a PowerPoint user to even think of taking this certification. I think we all agree, there are many ways to access features in PowerPoint, but in the testing in the certification environment, you do need to know and understand the feature names, the locations, which is really a good thing.
Yeah. And, some of the questions that were very focused on the language of the UI, like Troy said, may have seemed tricky, but I think this was the point of the beta test group to get presentation designers to sort of flush out the questions that may be tricky or misleading and help correct or reword them for when the test goes live and make sure things match the UI exactly.
Absolutely.
I think, first of all, I want to caveat any negative response I might have by saying, as I'm sure you guys did as well, that we're all very passionate about presentations, probably quite competitive as well, if we're honest. And so a chunk of the team doing it at Bright Carbon were not best pleased at some of those things. I think doing the practice tests is really important so that you understand that they are looking for precision in some of these things. And, that's one of the necessary requirements for doing a test like this, where it is going to be multiple choice or essay or something like that. You can't have vagaries as you can maybe with a practical test. But that idea of the precision required by some of the questions, things were very close to what you'd expect, had me at least and some of us, I think, second guessing, what is it? So the open book nature of it was vital to be able to go in and do it. But initially we found that frustrating. So I think being aware of that, if we'd have known that beforehand and probably just getting used to it through the practice tests and not thinking that was the real thing, is going to be really important for anyone taking it. But I did think, not to just be negative about it, that the general format was really good. I liked the way that it had a mix of different types of questions. I liked the way that you were able to pick up on kind of different approaches across all of those different facets of PowerPoint as well. I thought the in-depth nature of them was actually fascinating. As I said, I learned something. We've all kind of had to go away and research a little bit, which was fun. I mean, bizarrely, there were fun aspects of taking a test, which you never thought that you would ever say, but it was quite good fun like that, which I thought was really good. So there were some really positive aspects of the experience as well, but the precise nature of some of the questions did frustrate me.
If I hadn't already named this episode, because we do a little, we name it and it kind of gets put into our social media calendar, I think I would rename this episode, we took the Presentation Guild certification and it was bizarrely fun.
Well, now I just want, I don't know about you guys, but when we were all done, our team kind of regrouped and we had a debrief. And one thing we realized, it was kind of interesting how, we all had a different testing experience. We all had different questions. So it's not like, back in high school or whatever, like you get copy A, B, or C of the final exam. So you know which one or whatever. But, for what it's worth, we have submitted our beta feedback to the team saying, hey, these questions, this one was a little bit confusing, just so that part of the purpose of the beta testing is to help clarify the process. So I think we've all submitted our feedback so that come October, everyone's going to have a fantastic experience getting the certification.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Laurie. I think we're maybe, yeah, I'm certainly very much in the mindset of it was my experience as opposed to the future experience. We should bear in mind this was a beta.
Yep. Now, I want to call out, we've been talking about the multiple choice part of the testing so far, but there are actually two components of this test. I'm not even sure if we hit that. There's the 130 question multiple choice test that we've been talking about, but there's also the hands-on PowerPoint tasks. They're calling them practicals, which were a very different experience for me. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think both components are definitely necessary. I don't know if the online test needs to be as long as it is, not to be negative. It was just a lot of questions, but I chose to take the practical second. I forget if that was a choice or not, but I liked that order for me because it was saving the best for last. The practicals are a very necessary part of the test because that is where you demonstrate you have an understanding of all the tools.
Agreed. I thought they were fun. Is that okay to say a test was kind of fun?
Well, I have a strong feeling about this idea that a certification, you can't certify design. You can't certify what's good and what's bad. Laurie and I just got back from Europe and went through several museums of art, and there are things in there that I did not appreciate. But obviously the world does because they are very highlighted in certain museums. And you can't do a certification and say this is good or bad. That's an opinion. What you can do is you can say, do you know how to use this skill set? Do you have the skills to provide this? But the practicals are kind of on that fringe of, because they're actually presentation slides. You get a set of instructions. You have to redo or update this slide set, and then you upload it for a review. The practicals do a good job of focusing on the practical PowerPoint tasks with minimal design things. I enjoyed it. I actually like what you said, Tara, that's saving the best for last, because they were fun. They were just doing our job. They were designing slides with somebody giving some rules. I think it was a well-executed thing, and I actually think it's one of the highlights of the whole test-taking experience is that those are really well thought out and done well, and they also took the least amount of time for me.
Yeah, so I think the process was you had to pass the written test first, and then you could do the practical test. But in the practice test series, there is, I think it's 9 or 10 questions, one of which is a practical test. So you also get a chance at doing that as well during the practice series. But you're right, Troy. I think the time for us was spent largely on the written tests. That was where there was a huge amount of time spent. The practical tests, which
is aggravation, stress, all that. And I think that's a test-taking environment, but we may have had a little more. Yeah. Hey, let's talk about that time commitment. So we have the time commitment for both the certification testing, and it's not a minor undertaking. No one should actually, just like you said, Richard, expect to sit down with any preparation and go through this without some sort of outside researching, or at least a lot of guessing. And even then, guessing would be hard because some of them are fill in the blank. I mean, there's a really good mix of how the test is done. Let me summarize things. The certification description says, and I'm going to kind of summarize this, there are 5 steps in the process. You apply for the certification. You use the study guide to prepare for the exam. We'll talk about that in a minute here. You have to document your experience, which is kind of a unique thing, but you basically have to say, hey, I've done at least for the specialist level, at least 1,000 hours of professional presentation design. You have to take the practice test. Now, that's an option. I'm highly endorsing it because it does help change your mindset about what it is you're about to get into. And then you have to complete the certification presentation online tests and the practical tests. So the online test, it currently for us was 130 random selected questions. And it is a good mix. There are true, false, there's multiple choice. And then there's fun things. There's drag and drop to put things in order or match items. There's fill in the blanks. There was a lot of variety in the test-taking methodology. What do you guys think about the process and all that fun stuff?
I thought the process was clear. I think it was great. The only thing I feel strongly to point out is I did not like the fill in the blanks. that was just me. And it kind of harkens back to what you were saying, Richard, talk about precision, like, you know, it's fill in the blank. So spelling counts, you know, all of this. But we asked our team to work through the process, to review the study guide, to take the practice tests, research trouble spots that they discovered after taking the practice test, and then take the two-part test. We planned a week or so for this, for everyone to review and do all of this so that it could be spread out. So like Troy said, if you're trying to go through this, all the motions in one day, I think you need at least 6 hours, but I certainly wouldn't recommend that. What was interesting is that most of us took, I would say, 4 to 5 days to complete the certification. But that was after setting, you know, specific time, you know, set aside to focus on it. And one of our staff members, though, was traveling and then had a family emergency. And so she got through the whole process in 2 days. And of course, we all passed, which is great. But I think some of us had a little more stress than others.
I felt the possibly the biggest problem with it was just scheduling the time for the written test portion of it, because it's 130 questions. It's a lot. And it's a 3.5 hour block that you've got to complete it in, which is fine, but it's a 3.5 hour block in one go. So you can't pause it and come back to it again. And so trying to find the time to be able to do that was tricky. So just scheduling it over. And remember, you know, in the beta test, we had a 2 week period in which to try to do this. So in reality, you wouldn't quite struggle quite so much because you'd have a longer period of time to be able to try and do it. But that was really tricky. In terms of the overall time for the rest of the process, I think, you know, the application for it and looking at all the other bits and pieces and the documenting your experience was generally fairly easy. I think the experience documentation, you could go very granular if you want, and you could break that down a lot and spend a huge amount of time on it. But I think we were okay getting away with something that's more broadly higher level. And I think that's really what they're looking for, which is good. But that time taken to do the 130 questions was tricky.
Yeah. For me, I feel like studying and taking the practice tests is definitely, like you guys said, depending on how much you're doing in one day, several days to a couple weeks worth of work. It's hard to pin down an exact number, but I definitely agree with Troy that it's no minor undertaking. And touching on what you said, Lori, those fill in the blank questions. Yeah, those got me a few times because I'm like, does this need to match the UI exactly? Or does the sentence need to be grammatically correct? So, but I believe there's some leeway built into those. So that's good to know.
So did you guys, I think I know the answer, did everyone take the 30 question, the 3 10 question practice tests? Did you take 1, 2, 3 of them?
I'm trying to remember now. I know I took 2 of them. And then I think I was going to take the third one before I took the test. And I just bailed on it and saying, okay, I've got my mindset. But by then I'd also heard a number of our designers kind of, you know, bemoaning or talking about different things like, oh yeah, I got my head wrapped around this. But I don't think you want to jump in straight into the testing without taking, I would say, take all 3 of the practical tests or the practice tests, because they really do help set the mindset of where you're going to need to be, how detailed this test is, and how it's just going in realms you've probably never thought about. So I think they're critical, but I took 2 of them. I'm going to go with 2 as my answer. How's that?
I took all 3 online practice tests, and my teammate took all of the online practice tests and the practicals. I thought the practice tests were actually even more helpful than the study guide. Yeah, they were great because it helped you get to know the language the test is written in and more comfortable with the format.
Yeah, they're essential. I'd absolutely agree. I only took 1. Partly because I was a bit too cocky, mostly because of the time commitment to try to do it more quickly. And I regretted it because I think that probably led to more frustration as I was going through the initial bits because I wasn't fully used to the style or the tone of questioning, the kinds of things that you needed. But across the team, we had most people took 3, a couple of people took 1 or 2. But what it also did was, I think, raise some frustrations that we've already talked about the precise nature of the questions and things kind of early on. So I think it's a good way to be able to get that out of your system a little bit and get used to it. We had people fail, again, because you're getting used to it. Everyone passed the full thing. But I think it's a good opportunity to be able to fail in a, you know, in a safe environment, if you like, and just kind of get your frustrations and your experience out there first.
I'm comfortable to say I failed my first practice test. I was like, what the heck? And so, but I will say taking all three was critical because they do such a good job of, we'll talk about the standards, but they do such a good job of covering all the standards in these tests. So you have a great variety of questions. And so in taking all the practice tests, you have 30 questions. And that gave me a good idea of the areas that I'm like, ooh, I need to look at that again real quick, you know, before I take the real test.
Hey, a really good insight. And am I giving away anything here? There are three practice tests, 10 questions each, correct? There were 10 questions?
Yes.
Okay. Those questions are part of the pool for the real test. So those are actually potentially real test questions you would encounter. So you've taken 30 out of your 130. Well, there's a randomization, but you have a good chance of seeing some of those again, which I was pretty excited about when those popped up. I was like, oh, wait, I know this one. I'm done. Okay. Practice tests, good experience. Not being negative or scaring people, but thoughts on the study guide?
I think we should call it a study reference or suggestion guide.
Suggestion guide. Okay.
I mean, when I think of a study guide, I picture something filled with information that I can learn from. The study guide was for the certification, did an excellent job of overviewing the areas of testing and drilling down to the specifics. But to be honest, I found I was Googling a whole lot to fill in, you know, my personal blanks. So it's a study guide. It's more of a reference of what's covered.
Yeah. Even though the practice tests, like we were saying, helped more, I think. I was still glad there was a study guide. Like going in blind would have been terrifying. At least it gives you an idea of the subjects that are going to be on the test. It helps you figure out where your strengths and weaknesses are and where you need to focus. It's something to go off of and like it almost helps you make a checklist.
Yep. Totally agree.
I have to say I didn't find it useful. I thought it didn't add significantly over the standards. It really just described the standards in language, and there's not a huge amount to it. So it's definitely, here's the things that you should research. And to be fair, it does say that, you know, research XYZ topic, which is okay. But I feel that you could do that from just the standards as well. It's not really designed to be a training guide. And the idea of having links and stuff is difficult because those things can and do change all the time. So giving someone a stable resource is really hard. So I think study guide is maybe poorly named. It's things to research, as you said, Laurie. I think that's good. And don't consider it to be a training guide as such.
Yeah. So how did you guys study for the test? And what would you recommend to those who are going to go for their certification?
And building on what Richard just said, like it also helped me to make my own study guide from their study reference guide. I used a Google Doc like to strike through what I already knew, paste in sources, made notes. It was a great way for me to organize myself, identify where I needed to focus and not feel overwhelmed. And you can also refer back to it while you're taking the test, which is helpful.
It's a curious question for me that I see this test, this certification as being a confirmation of excellence, which is what we all are, rather than a way to become excellent. So I'd almost say that the way to prepare for it is to play around, is to build presentations. I mean, obviously, I think people are going to do that. You've got to have a minimum of 6 months experience, 1,000 hours to be able to do it. So I think if you know presentations and you do it, just push yourself. If you're doing the same kinds of things regularly, as you said, Tara, just go into other parts of the UI, see what's possible. Because this test does cover everything. It covers all facets of PowerPoint and some things beyond as well. So some of the design principles vaguely that you might need and some of the other things like Creative Commons and stuff. So where you're sourcing things from. So just play around with it. Anything that you're not familiar with, look through all the tabs and all the functions and stuff and just have some fun with it.
I think that's so good.
20 years of PowerPoint design was not enough to just sit down and take this test. So studying the study guide was probably the most frustrating experience for me because I actually read the whole thing and I kind of felt like that was a lot of time used that I shouldn't have. Yeah. So I don't think experience is enough to just sit down and say, here it is. Because like I said, some questions were, hey, we're going to use this dropdown, which one doesn't belong? And all four options sounded logical. I'm thinking I've used those two. These other two, I don't know. Maybe they're just not a part of my work cycle. So yeah, how do you study for the test is kind of interesting. Experience is definitely going to be your biggest study buddy, but it's not going to be everything you need. Okay, let me pivot us to the actual...
But just on that experience bit, remember it's open book, which I think is the key part of it. So your 20 years experience, Troy, mean that you know, here are the four options. Here's two of them. Oh, well, I know where they are. I'll immediately go and find them. And then you can see, you know, which ones aren't appropriate. Oh, no, okay, that one doesn't exist, for example. And that is something that, you know, comes from the experience. If you didn't have that experience, it would take you the full 3 hours to try to find it. So that's an important thing to consider.
You know what actually took me the longest was finding where to find stuff, because I use keyboard shortcuts and the QAT emphatically. I mean, it's just my workflow. And I was like, oh, crud, where do you find those things? They're right here on my QAT.
So with you. It's like, name all the ways that you can do this. I don't know. I do one of them. I do only need one.
Yeah, so that was, and again, tricky. So that these were tricky. But yeah, that actually probably took me more time, is actually finding where to find things in the traditional ribbon, you know, not customized setups. Okay, let me pivot us to the actual test. Along the lines of this being open book, what are some ideas you have or suggestions, tips you can give? Here's my favorite. I walked into the office and Lori was doing her test. So I kind of knew this. So I'm kind of being quiet and just going to go grab what I needed. And she has her phone out and she's talking to Siri with, Siri, how do I spell tertiary? I just laugh. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I need this answer and I got to spell it right, because spelling counts on this test. So that was open book to an extreme. I thought it was phenomenal. I totally wish I would have captured it on video.
You're going to get us trouble. We're giving away answers. No, can't do that. But in terms of tips and stuff, I will say I had PowerPoint open and I had some basic elements spread across slides so I could play with them. I had a photo, I had a table, I had a chart, because in taking the test, you're going to say, wait a second, how do I do that? I want to confirm that that's the right thing. And so I found that I ended up with a PowerPoint presentation of like 15 slides of just different elements that I was poking around and using to verify my answers.
I did exactly the same thing, Laurie. But one thing I would recommend is that you start with a totally blank PowerPoint. So just the standard things that come straight out of the box. If you've got a custom normal template that you use, try to open up just a regular theme, because some of the questions are about the settings that you can apply, which are the defaults. So don't open up an existing deck where you may have changed some of those things if you want to look at it.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I had a blank PowerPoint fresh file open. And a part of the studying process too is having that blank file open and practicing with media and things like that and charts and things. So I just used that same file that I used to study off of that had those elements in it, like Lori was saying, like a chart or a table. I had Excel open and a chart in Excel open and things like that. So any sort of question that would pop up, I had those elements ready to go to check on things.
Okay, I'm going to actually lay it out there. I think you should open up that's a really good point, Richard. You should start with a Microsoft default file, but I think you should have a generic photo slide, a generic table slide, a generic chart slide, a bar chart maybe, a bullet list, because, you know, just have it available so you don't spend time typing in that. I think you should have a video on a slide. I think you should have an image on a slide. Did I already say that? I mean, you should have all these just ready to go. Just save a file called My Test Taking Samples and just have them available. You don't know what you're going to need, but they'll be helpful.
But Troy, without giving away any questions, what about some of the questions that may or may not involve inserting some of those elements as well?
Yeah.
Okay, have a folder with all those things. You're not-
Okay, so we've been talking about the 130 multiple choice questions. Real quick, any high-level thoughts on the practicals? Something to be afraid of? And what do you think? Can we prepare for those?
They were the most fun. They were also the quickest thing I did. And it was like, hey, this is what I do. I think the practicals, I can't find any fault with them, except for maybe the upload system. User tip. There's not a multiple upload. Once you hit upload, you're done. You cannot re-upload your file. So if you forget to rename it, because that could be one of the requests, rename it first before you upload it because you don't get a do-over. I don't think anybody could have a problem with these if they use PowerPoint on a regular basis. They were good. They were innovative. Some of the questions is like, oh, wait, how do you do that? Or not the questions, the tasks. Okay, what do you guys say?
The other thing that was quite good about it is just the time aspect. So it didn't take very long, as you pointed out, which is nice, but also it's 9 different practicals and you can do them over a 48-hour period. So unlike the written tests where it all has to be done within 3.5 hours, you can do these over the following 48 hours. So you've got a little bit more time. It's just easier for scheduling as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you're prepared for the online test and truly comfortable in PowerPoint, I feel like this is enough to be prepared for the practicals. The practicals were definitely my favorite part of the test, and they were actually kind of fun. I loved the designs. There were a couple places within the downloads themselves where the directions were a little confusing for me, but for the most part, they didn't stress me out at all. And I feel like any confusion will be worked out after the beta phase.
Yep. And I would just say to wrap all that up is that just, you know, there are instructions and make sure you read all the instructions and I think you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? User tip, going back to the other tips, I'm going to combine these two. If you have dual monitors, they're great because you can keep the test on one and PowerPoint on the other. In addition, if you're taking the practicals, you can use like Snagit and just capture those tasks for the practicals and put them on your other monitor so you can just work on the design portion of it without having to refer back and forth. Save me some time. And also let me delete slides that weren't supposed to be in the final so I wouldn't forget. Okay, hopefully this is a positive way to wrap up things, but anyone is given permission to pass. Did you successfully pass the certification? I think we know the answer to that. How long did it take for you to take the test section and then the practical section? And what was your final percentage score?
So we had a range of people doing this. The quickest person combined written and practical was 1 hour, 50 minutes. I think he did it all in and just went through it like crazy. Others of us took probably 3.5 hours. And in general, the practical portion of it was always around 20 to 30 minutes. The written portions were kind of much longer and varied. And I suspect part of the longer time period, so I took, I think it was 2 hours and 58 minutes and 33 seconds, apparently.
Wow.
But a chunk of that is, you know, going through, being thorough, thinking, you know, doing that second guessing and stuff, but also at the same time writing some notes. So I would expect if you weren't trying to test it and pick up on things, it's going to take you at least 2 hours for most people, but there's that. I did better on the practice test that I did. I got 91% on that, and I got 90% on the actual test. So I got worse, but only by a little bit. And we had, I think the highest score we got on any of the tests was 92%, and most of them were in the 80s.
Most of our group got in the 80s, which means I did not get an A, and that almost killed me because I am one of those kids that like to get straight A's. And indicative of that, I took about closer to 3 hours on the multiple choice, but I tend to be very thorough. You know, I want to read a question. I want to understand it. That's just how I take tests. And for the practicals, again, quite fun. I cranked out all 9 and definitely under an hour. But I also kept getting interrupted because, you know, your client emails are popping up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll send that to you real quick and do all that. So, yeah. And I can't remember my final score. It was in the upper 80s. But I know that I did better than Troy.
just remember on the scoring that if you get something wrong, that subtracts a point.
Yes.
Yeah, the scoring was kind of a thing. I just gave up and like, I'm just taking this. But yeah, because there's a lot of rules. You know, there's additions, there's subtractions. Lori did not do that much better than me. I did marry up, so it just proves it right there.
Sometimes if there's like an 8-part question, I think it's they're all their own point, which is kind of nice. It's like if you miss one thing on an 8-part question, you don't get the whole question wrong. I believe that's how it worked.
Yeah, it is. So every single thing where there is an answer is 1 point. So it means that some questions are weighted more than others. So when you've got
like a single choice, then that's it. But when there's multiple answers in there, that's going to be worth more for that question compared to others.
I completed. Wait, how long did it take you, Tara? Did you?
Mine took me an hour and a half. I did pass.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I took all. I feel like mine was a little faster because I took all three practice tests, and I took the whole time to take the practice test, and I did really bad on them, and it really made me go back and dig in. So when I went to take the actual test, I felt really good about it. It took me an hour and a half. I got a 93. I don't recall exactly how long the practicals took, maybe 2 hours. I feel like that attention to detail, Lori, you had on the online. I was like that with my practicals. I wanted them to be perfect. But they give you plenty of time to do the practicals. I think you have a couple days or something.
And, you know, not to defend myself, but too, I think to hearken a little bit to what we were talking about earlier in that, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and there's a lot of ways to do one thing. So when I'm answering a question, I'm also probably struggling because I'm like, okay, I know they want to look for this, but you really could also do that. And so, you know, yeah, I probably overthought some things, but I would just say that's just because I've been doing this for a long time. So I just want to make sure that I'm answering, you know, giving the answer that's the right one.
I took my two practicals and I figured, I got B's on these. Let's just go for it. I'll do better when I, you know, when I really focus on practice tests. Yes. I did the two practice tests, got B's on those. So I passed them both. I was like, let's just move on. I didn't do it in the same day. I did do them across, two different days on the two practice tests. And I sat down, took the whole test. I took the whole test in just under 2 hours. And I thought I was going pretty fast. Okay. I take it back. I did have a few hangups. I it was in the evening cause I just couldn't, Lori did it during business hours and I just can't focus on anything for a solid 2 to 3 hours because of calls, emails, urgent needs, review of projects, you know, contracts. So I did it in the evening. So I may have stopped to get a glass of wine and have that. We did have our 7-year-old niece visiting us for the summer. So I did go help with tucking her into bed. So, you know, I had a few distractions, but I did finish in under 2 hours. And the practicals, I don't think you could have taken that long on those, Tara. I think I did all the practicals in 45 minutes. And somebody could take a lot longer, by the way. But I thought those were pretty straightforward. And the unfortunate thing is I ended up with the exact same score. I still got a B. And that's maybe something to say. Out of our studio, out of everybody that took it, Lori, did everybody get in the 80% range? Nobody got above 90, did they?
Yeah, correct.
So we have people that have been full-time PowerPoint designers for 3 years to 20 years. We all got about the same scoring. Think that may say something about the testing, that it's not actually your experience, but your ability to know where to find the answer. I think it went really good. Everybody passed, so no complaints. And I'm looking forward to hearing people's experience as they go forward when this officially launches, because I think we've been very nice in saying what we think. We've also been very good Presentation Guild Presentation Guild authorities and not giving away answers.
They're going to take that one question out.
I think on the score, you know, you're grading yourselves. I think that's unfair. But, you know, as I said, really competitive, all of us. Tara, your comments definitely demonstrate that, which is brilliant. And I think everyone doing this test is probably going to have a not too dissimilar mindset. Just as you go through, remember it is pass or fail. Don't worry about the percentage because, as you said, Lori, there are different ways of doing things. So if you can get most of them right, if you can get over 80%, you're good. I really don't see that there's that much of a difference between someone who gets 81% and someone who gets 99% because it's all about how you can do it. But Troy, one of the things that we should have mentioned earlier is your point about cracking open a bottle of wine because that's much better. Ingrid, I mentioned earlier, she did the unofficial study guide. She said that the second half of the test went so much better for her because she had some really nice cider. And she's European, so she means hard cider by that. And it's definitely worth, you know, don't take it too far, obviously, but, you know, just relax, enjoy the process and it'll be good.
Richard, you're the best.
And so, Lori, you doing it during business hours in the morning, I would also recommend cracking open a bottle of wine.
I know, right? But that might not set a good example for the rest of the staff. So, you know.
We'll get wine for them as well.
Well, there you go.
professional certifications, well, they're about to become a reality for the presentation industry. It's an exciting addition to many things that have kind of evolved over the past 10 years of me being in and observing this industry grow. I think it's going to have a positive impact on the overall presentation design niche of this larger presentation design industry. I want to thank you, Lori, Tara, and Richard for spending an hour with everyone listening to this episode. It has been great. As a part of the beta test, I just want to reinforce, we definitely got thrown into the deep end and had lots of mixed emotions through the process. And I don't think they totally came out in this episode. It was hard. You know, being a beta tester, it can be there. Looking past this beta environment and knowing the behind the scene activity with the certification team, well, they're crazy busy implementing so many final things. This is going to be a great experience for you and for the presentation industry. The show notes will have info and links to the presentation certification website so you can get the details. And also listen in on our next podcast. The one immediately following this will be a conversation from the opposite side of the table. It's going to be the administrative side of this whole thing, with the key administrators from the presentation certification team joining us, which promises to be a conversation full of lots of insights and info about everything presentation certification. Okay, we're wrapping up our time together with our favorite pro and tech tip this week. This does not need to be presentation or PowerPoint specific, just so you know, you guys can think about this. Anything cool that you've found and use for this week, I'll just kick it off here. I'm going to go literally with a tech tip and a pro tip all combined. So here's my scenario. The scenario is the presenter has added a script to the presenter notes, and it's, you know, really fleshed out and you know exactly what they're saying, which is really helpful when designing slides to kind of know what they're going to be saying. And it's also helpful for the presenter to know what they're saying many times. Okay, so here's the ask. They ask you, hey, how long do you think this presentation is going to take for me to go through? Well, you actually have all the tools to give them a very good answer. Here's the tech tip portion first. Use the tools too. That's tools, T-O-O, PowerPoint add-in. They have an extract notes feature. It is phenomenal. I use it many, many times. Literally two buttons and you create a Word document with all the notes from the entire presentation in a Word doc, one Word doc page per slide. So you have 50 slides, you're getting up with a 50-page Word doc instantaneously. Now you have all the script in an easy copy and paste format. Here's the pro tip. Go into the file info tab on the Word document and you can see how many words are in that document. Then go to Talk Time Estimator. This is an online app. I recently covered it on the PowerPoint blog. It's the July 4th post. I'll put a link to it in the notes, but you can just go to July 4th. Literally go there, type in the number of words, and it'll give you an estimator based on, there's a couple of variables in there, but it'll tell you exactly how long it's going to take to finish that in a normal talk pace. There's my pro and tech tip. By the way, I just did this last week, so it's top of mind because the presenter asked me this and I gave him an answer. I said, well, based on this, and then I had to actually add in, I'm like, and you have a 2-minute and 3-second video, so we should probably add that in. And then, you know, everything else. So they were amazed that I could give that information, and it really wasn't that hard when you know the tips. Okay.
Actually, I have a book tip. On our team, we started a book club this year. We're currently reading Herding Tigers by Todd Henry, and it's about leading creative teams, but it's not just for managers. It's been really beneficial to both the project managers and the designers, and I'd recommend it to anyone who works on a creative team.
Could you send me a link? I'll throw it into the show notes because I've never heard of it. Is it like a management book, or are you guys far enough into it to even know what you're reading?
Yeah, we're about halfway through. Yeah, it's definitely not just for managers. It's for everybody. And you never know where your career path is going to take you. And it's a great book all around for designers and project managers.
I have a Photoshop tip. Can I just combine my two? I'm with a company this week on site, and they asked me to create, you know, using Morph, I'm doing this thing with a ton of photos. We start on one big one, then a second big one, and then magically they all come together in this huge collage to show the width and breadth of the line. That being said, I had to prep all these photos, and they were all different sizes. So like I often do, I figured out my my size that I needed in PowerPoint, but then built everything in layers in Photoshop so everything would be consistent. I taught Troy something new yesterday, so this doesn't happen often, so I'm kind of proud of it. So he wasn't aware when I have all my layers named in Photoshop and ready to go, I just highlight all of my layers in the layer panel, right click, and either save as ping or export as, quick export as ping or export as, and it will literally export out each layer individually, named as a layer name, and boom, I'm done.
I am experimenting with that today. That sounds amazing, and I can't believe I did not know that was an option.
It was great. Saved me a lot of time.
I think for me, picking up on what you've just said, Laurie, morph is still underutilized for storytelling. So despite everything you, Troy, and Sandy and Nolan say about it on the podcast, I'd try to encourage everyone to try using it. One really good technique is to layer images on top of each other with the one on top cropped. And so you can then use morph to do all sorts of different things with it. So you can create a zoom lens effect, or you can reveal something crisp from a blurred image underneath, or maybe a cutaway where you might use two different but related images laid on top of each other. So I think there's some really cool things there. And shameless plug alert, if you go to the Bright Carbon blog, we've got kind of step-by-step articles on how to do some of those things. But just play with it. Think about how you can use morph for storytelling as opposed to just design, which I think is what a lot of people focus on. And Troy, your session at the Presentation Summit last year also picked up on just the ways that you can try to push it. I think it's a great way of giving you ways to kind of tell stories with genuinely useful techniques that you've simply not been able to do before in PowerPoint.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. We have a PowerPoint blog at thepowerpointblog.com. And we have lots of photos of our kind of behind the scenes and travels at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
Okay, and this is Lori from TLC. I'm just going to say ditto to all of what Troy just mentioned. But if you need a smile or a laugh, shameless plug, seriously, go to Instagram and look for our puppy. Her name is Scout Collar, S-C-O-U-T-C-H-O-L-L-A-R. She's really cute.
Oh, lovely. This is Richard from Bright Carbon. We're a presentation design and e-learning agency. You'll find free 30-minute masterclasses every Thursday on our website, brightcarbon.com, along with awesome ideas and techniques on our blog. And follow us on the Twitter, @BrightCarbon, for more cool tips.
This is Tara Sheffield from SlideRabbit. You can find all of our info at sliderabbit.com. We provide high-quality, custom-branded presentation design services and workshops.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.